So last class, I don't think we had last week, but last class 2 weeks ago, and we discussed the background for our two primary questions, which were, why do we need a location, a state, or a land, rather, to be a nation? And then why that has to be this land, the land of Israel. And we discussed the background, which was understanding that the mitzvot basically have two dimensions to them. There's the personal dimension and the national dimension. We gave the example of a moving company, whereas the individual may be looking at it as a workout, and I'm sure it is. And I'm sure he's healthier for it and stronger for it if he's working for a moving company. That's certainly not how you would categorize the goal of the moving company. The goal of the moving company is not the fitness of its workers, right? The goal of the moving company is to help people move. The fitness of its workers are both a necessity in order to do that well as a natural outcome of participating in that. So the mitzvot themselves have two dimensions as well. The individual, your relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, your spiritual fitness, which is being refined through the performance of mitzvot, as well as the goal of Klal Yisrael, the moving company, the goal of Klal Yisrael, which we're aiming to accomplish through a tziruf of all of these mitzvot. You know, and it's interesting to consider this idea, especially in light of the discussion by Hillel Beit Shammai and Ervin. I don't know if you're familiar with whether it was good or bad for people to be good or bad. Noach lo la'adam shenivra or shelo nivra. Familiar with the question? Overall, was it helpful? Noach, is it good for man to be created or not created? The Maskana of that Gemara seems to be no, because you're more likely in your lifetime not to live up to your requirements than to live up to your requirements, and so it seems like you have a net loss. Okay, there's a lot to talk about along the lines of that Gemara. Nonetheless, you could ask, you know, if that's the case, you know, then if most individuals are losing out, then why didn't God just do us a favor and not create us, and we wouldn't be losing out? And perhaps, you know, you can say that the national mission was the reason we're here in the first place. The national mission perhaps was the reason we're here, we were created, we're given the Torah, everything centers around the national mission. And then that Gemara finishes, well, now that you're here, do Torah and mitzvot so you can actually better your circumstance. And that's from the individual's perspective. Right? Meaning you weren't created for you. There was no you for whom to be created at that point. It's like, why God created you? Well, he wanted to do you a favor. There was no me. What's the favor? You make me and then make me need a favor? Obviously, there was a purpose beyond that. A purpose beyond that that we all needed to be created, you know, for which we all needed to be created. And then we have an individual of Oda within that context. But to say that itself generated the need to be created, there was no you to need to be created for you, right? So we're probably created for something else. And that something is something like our national mission, which is our primary avoda towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And you have the individual domain. So we said that the mitzvot have both of those dimensions. We also mentioned that there are some mitzvot that seem to only have the national dimension, and those mitzvot are mitzvot atzluyot ba'aretz, and they're not shayach in chutz la'aretz because the national dimension of the mitzvot only seems to apply in Eretz Yisrael. And that's not just from like a machshava perspective, like, oh, it's really only in, you know, like the Ramban, you know, saying it's basically practice. No, this is a halachic. Like, you don't need to do Shemitah and Chutz La'aretz. You're not like being machmir if you do. You know, it's like it's just not shayach there. It's not relevant. There are, like, halachically speaking, there are mitzvot that only apply here, and those seem to be mitzvot which are uniquely which exist uniquely within the national dimension. Most mitzvot, or half the mitzvot, have both dimensions. Those which only have a national component, or only need to be done in Eretz Yisrael. And we suggested that perhaps because the Avot weren't themselves, you know, Jews, so to speak, who were chayav in Torah and mitzvot, but they were the founders of the nation, so maybe they weren't chayav in the individual dimension. Maybe they were, however, chayav in the national dimension. And what was the nafkamina there? Well, they only did mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. Because it's just as shayach to do mitzvot everywhere from an individual perspective. They weren't chayav on an individual level. They didn't receive the Torah. They weren't Jews, so to speak. The national dimension is only relevant in Eretz Yisrael, and that seems to be what is being mechayev them in the mitzvot, the national mission. Okay. So from there, we can talk about why we need a nation, why we need a land to accomplish this. Why shouldn't we be doing Shemitah in wherever we're living in Chutz Lars? So why do we need a land? And then why this land in particular? Two different questions. So Rav Kook points out, you know, that if you're going to, there are different ways of saying this, of phrasing this, but let's say our goal has something to do with,
Do we say like we know our goal or not?
We know it. There are different formulations.
That's a different question.
There are different formulations. It has something to do with representing a Kodesh Baruch Hu in this world. Is that the goal? Is that the avoda that reaches the goal? It has something to do with representing a Kodesh Baruch Hu in this world. Something that has to do with being a goy kadosh, right? Or an or, or a mamlechet kohen. It has something to do with service of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, representing him in the world, bringing him into the world. There are different formulations. I don't think it's critical that we get stuck on the exact formulation. But Rav Kook points out that there are tchumim, there are areas of life that are accomplished and performed by the individual, which is not a collective avoda. It's not a we, it's a me. An example of that would be a relationship, you know, a marriage, for example. A marriage is between individuals. I don't know how you would do a group marriage. I don't recommend trying it. It is an individual avoda. It is an individual responsibility. It's an individual area of life. And so your responsibility of an Eved Hashem is not just to be a husband, but it is to be a godly husband, a divine husband, a husband who executes their familial responsibilities as a Kodesh Baruch Hu would expect, or in a divine manner. In that way, you represent a Kodesh Baruch Hu in this world in a unique way that only a husband could. You bring him into every facet of life. I was speaking to someone, like a chatan, and you know, he was asking. He wasn't so like keen on chatan classes. He agreed to like talk to me, but he wasn't like so keen on chatan classes. And he's like, what do you know about my relationship? You know, it's like, what do you? I'm gonna tell you, like, I know her and she knows me and we know each other and we know what works and we care about each other and we're working, you know, on ourselves. And it's like, what do you know about our relationship? What do you know we need to do? What do you know? And I said, the goal of Chatan classes is not to teach you how to be a good husband. The goal of Chatan classes is to teach you how to be a godly husband. For the same reason that you may think that you could be a good person without Torah or mitzvot, and on some level you probably could be. It doesn't mean that you're a godly person. Okay, you're not a jerk. In fact, maybe you're a nice guy. But there are some things that Kadosh Baruch Hu was expecting you to do in this lifetime that you would not have figured out on your own. You just wouldn't have. And the same exists for your role as a husband. The same exists for your role as a father. The same exists for all these things. It's not just about, you know, I'm going to be a good husband. There may be ways that a Kadosh Baruch Hu expects you to be a good husband that you would not have thought of on your own. And that's what the lessons, you know, in Hashgafa and in Halacha teach us about those things. So that's on an individual level, and that's our individual avoda, and that is something that only exists on the individual sphere. It doesn't really have doesn't really exist on a national sphere in that regard. There are other things which are not only not done by individuals, but cannot be done by individuals. Right? These are just two domains that we can classify, that we can categorize all of human behavior in, individual and collective. And it's very broad. There are two domains that human beings act within, individual and collective. So the collective domain would be like, you know, in a more abstract sense, society or culture. In a more specific sense, you could say government, you could say economy, you could say military, you could say, I don't know, those are like the main examples that I had. But you can't have an individual's economy. An economy is fundamentally made up of the masses, multiple people, okay? You can't have an individual army, that's called being a soldier, and you're probably not going to be very successful. You can't have an individual government, meaning, in a sense, we are all, you know, our own governors, you know. But there are things that you can't do as an individual. So if there's a plane of individual behavior and a plane of collective behavior, then our responsibility as Klal Yisrael becomes to bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu or represent a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the individual sphere as well as the national sphere. Now, you run into a practical issue with a lot of these things when you don't have your own space to do that. For example, how would, let's say you're trying to represent the Kadosh Baruch Hu by showing what a divine economy would look like. Represent the Kadosh Baruch Hu through the economy itself. How would you do that when you are in a different country with its own economy, surrounded by people who are not bound by your laws? It wouldn't really be possible. It's not even a sensical proposition, even, to say, I'm going to create an individual economy, but, you know, made up of me and a couple of my friends who live around me. It just doesn't, I don't even know what that means. Similarly, a government. If you live in New York, you can't decide that you are now a independently functioning government who's under your own authority within the state of New York that follows Torah law. That's not going to work out for you. You know, I would say the same thing goes for a military, but of course, in America, you can create your own militia, so it's not entirely true. But there is a certain element of a certain practical need just to be in a space where we can generate these things. A space with an independent and self-sufficient economy, etc., 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 so that we can demonstrate how to do this in a Torah way. Now the Ramban zooms out for a second and emphasizes even more so the significance of being in a unique place. And he says, basically, what's going to happen if and when all of Klal Yisrael is in Israel, performing the mitzvot, fulfilling their national mission, what's going to happen is, well, what the Torah says is going to happen. So if we have a holy army, right, a kadosh machane, as the Torah tells us, then what's going to happen? We're going to have a successful one, as the Torah tells us. Okay, if we do Torah and mitzvot, like the Torah instructs us, so we'll be supported financially. We'll get rain in its proper time, and we'll have produce, and there'll be no deficiencies, as the Torah tells us. If we do Shemitah, and we respect the land in that way, so the land will give us everything that we need, as the Torah tells us. So you look throughout, and there's this kind of like metaphysical dynamic. What's the better word for it? It's kind of like, it's like science in a sense, right? You know, on a physical level, if you do A, then B happens. If you water the grass, then the grass grows. So these things are described on a spiritual level as well. If Klal Yisrael does this, then this will happen. And so the Ramban explains that the best way to represent Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world is to do exactly what he's telling us to do, so that everything that he says will happen if we do that happens. And then it's like, how could you ignore the reality of what's going on here? They're happy, healthy, successful, safe, they live this ideal existence that the Torah promises them by mere extension of the fact that they're following Torah and mitzvot to the T. And then both the Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence in the world, as well as the superiority of following Torah and mitzvot, is just abundantly clear. It's a natural product of us doing what we are supposed to do. And something that the Ramban says very explicitly can only be accomplished in an independent territory, namely Eretz Yisrael. And he says specifically Eretz Yisrael, but he doesn't elaborate why necessarily only Eretz Yisrael, but certainly in an independent land, because how could it ever be made clear? How could it ever be made clear that, you know, in every society, you're going to have some people succeed and some people not succeed. In every society, some people are healthy and some people are not healthy. In every society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So if we're scattered amongst every society, so then it's not going to be clear what's happening. It'll just be, okay, you know, there's some people who were successful and some people who aren't successful. It's not going to be clear what's going on. But in Eretz Yisrael, if everyone is successful and everyone is healthy and everyone has what to eat and everyone is happy and everyone and everyone and everyone and everyone, right, then all of a sudden, what, you know, it becomes very clear what's going on. So that's in terms of the need for an independent land in order to accomplish the national mission, both on a practical level of how you can construct the national frameworks that we're expected to, as well as on the level of the effect of it being noticeable that we are, you know, achieving that which the Torah is setting out before us and being rewarded in the manner that the Torah details. That also becomes clear only when we constitute an entire society unto ourselves to demonstrate the success of a nation that follows the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't really get into why Eretz Yisrael specifically. And listen, you could just say, you know, anything between, well, it had to be somewhere, and if God didn't tell us one place, then it probably wouldn't have been anywhere. So God chose the place. You know, and no matter what answer you give, that will probably also be true, right? I mean, that's always going to be an element of the answer, because it's a place that God chose. You know, if you have a suffix, so just read the Torah. It's very clear that this is the place that he chose. But can we concoct a more or a deeper understanding either of why God chose this place or what it means that he chose this place or what is the implication of that choice, right? Can we understand the significance of this land in the context of the accomplishing our national mission to a greater depth than just saying, well, this is the land that God chose. There are those who I have seen who like to explain it as a historical, you know, significance. We made the land holy. We made the land unique. We did this. We did this. It's partially true, but it would seem odd that a Kodesh Baruch Hu would send Avraham to a specific land to establish national significance there. But I mean, this seems to be the goal, milchachila, before we did anything unique here. So to understand what's unique about this land on an intrinsic level. So we'll have to get into pseudo-geographical statements that Chazal make about Eretz Yisrael and try to uncover what exactly they're talking about. So first of all, what exactly am I talking about? So Chazal attribute certain geographical significance to Eretz Yisrael, and that's a good starting point for understanding its intrinsic significance, both on a pshat level and then on a deeper level. What geographical significance does Chazal attribute to the land of Israel?
I mean, in the Torah, it's like supposed to be like. I mean, this is also like a weird question because it's not really like specific, like as in like God could have made Israel anywhere else. But fine, let's say once we say it is Israel, like we say it's supposed to be like a very like producing land.
Very so it, you know, it can produce a lot.
Yeah.
So so this is a I would call that even more of an agricultural significance. To the land of Israel. Let's talk geographical significance to the land of Israel. Geographical, if we're familiar with any Ma'amarei Chazal, with the geographical significance of the land of Israel. So Chazal say that Eretz Yisrael is the center of the world. And Yerushalayim is the center of Eretz Yisrael. Now, they say that, which, you know, maybe that gives us an inkling as to what the significance of the land is. You know, it's the center, that seems to be a focal point, you know, maybe that makes it easier to be an Or Goyim if we are, you know, a focal point for the world. What's odd about the statement, though, is the world is a globe, and Chazal were aware of this, and anything could be the center of a globe. So, again, we have to try to understand a little bit better what it means that we are that Eretz Yisrael is the center of the world. The Maharal explains this. He takes this to kind of a very metaphysical place. And I'm still not sure how literal to take this, how much of it is like a literal analysis and how much of it is an idea. Generally, for the Maharal, the idea is the literal analysis, meaning like an idea is not a lesson for the Maharal. An idea is the... you call it like the metaphysical science of something. Like this is how it works in the spiritual domain. So, well, isn't there this problem? Okay, you know, but I don't like that because it sounds, I don't know, it sounds, I don't know, what's the, bigoted. And it's like, okay, well, you don't have to like it, but if this is how it works, this is how it works. Right? So the Maharal explains as follows. right? So what's the significance of the center? What's the significance of the center? Nick talks about this in a couple different places. But I want to focus on one in particular that he says regarding Eretz Yisrael. I don't have a board here, but I want you to imagine...
There is a board there.
Oh, there is a board. I don't have a marker. But I want you to imagine a circle, you know, big circle, with intersecting lines running through the circle all over. Intersecting lines running through the circle. So, if you look at the border of the circle, okay, so, and you wanted to, you know, plot those lines out, they would each have a different point, right? Ask yourself, at the border of the circle, okay, what is the plot point of any given line? This is, I don't know, 7-3, and this is, I don't know, whatever it is. Like, that's it. Okay. Every single intersecting line has a distinct and independent point within the circumference of the circle. Okay? But there is a place within the circle that every independent line is not on a... independent point, but rather a shared point. Where in the circle is every independent line sharing one singular point?
Middle.
Middle. Center. Right? So you have an inherent unity of all different and divergent entities at the center. So in around the edges, everything exists as an independent entity. At the center, all independent entities are classified in, you know, are defined by one shared point. In fact, you can't even tell at that point that they are independent entities. It just looks like one point. It only looks like different points outside of the center. That's fascinating, especially given what we just said about the mitzvot. Right? What types of mitzvot are relevant outside the center, namely in Chutz La'aretz? Those which are individually focused on you as an individual, your relationship with God. Now, what mitzvot are primary and uniquely relevant in the center? That which is incumbent upon the collective, the nation. See, the Maharal explains we can only be a nation at the center because a nation is a group defined by a common identity. Only at the center do we have something in common, or are we classified by that which we have in common. Outside the center, we are classified by the points from which we diverge. It's whether we're independents or whether we're a collective. At the center, we're a collective. We share one point. But outside the center, we're divergent. That's why we can only be a collective at the center. And therefore, we can only do those things which are incumbent upon the collective in the center. The Maharal brings this up not actually with regard to the mitzvot, but with regard to how Torah is learned in different places. It says, you look throughout Shas, and there's a distinction drawn between Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael and Talmidei Chachamim in Bavel. Okay? In Psachim it says Talmidei Chachamim and Bavel hate each other. It's like, we're talking, you know, it's shocking. Okay? But in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, Tamid Chachamim are Nasim Chaverim Zeim Zeim. Oh, they're all friends. Right? The statements like this can be seen throughout Shas. And he points out that what's being said here, we're not talking about a simple, like, they hate each other, they love each other. What's being spoken about here is whether they are together or opposite one another. The hate is is the term used to describe their oppositional nature towards one another. Whereas the love is the term used to describe their connection and unity with one another. He explains that because Eretz Yisrael is conducive to the unity, it's the point where all points connect, and outside of Eretz Yisrael is conducive to separation. He says, you can also see this in the Derech HaLimud. In the Derech HaLimud. Right? The Talmudic analysis that we are familiar with is Babylonian, right? It is clearly Chutz La'aretz Torah, right? That Torah is about analyzing things and drawing chilukim between one another. Nafkamin is differences, chilukim, this thing works this way, this thing works that way. It says the halachic system could have only been made in Chutz La'aretz. Because that's the style of the learning. To tear things apart and identify how they're different. Now, what style of learning can only be done in Eretz Yisrael? Nevuah. Ideas. Seeing the big picture. Halacha is breaking the picture down into constituent elements, and that's why it's perfect for Chutz La'aretz. Right? Machshava and Nevuah are putting the details together to see the bigger picture, and that's Eretz Yisrael. These are the two types of learning. The Maharal actually has a lot more about the center versus the, for example, this, the circumference has length and width, and the center lacks that. So he says, so this is why it's a place of specifically, it's a place that lacks physical space in a sense. It's spiritual, it's divine. Whereas outside the center is characterized by its physical space. He says a lot about the center, but that's the primary in Netivot Torah, where he discusses there the implications of being in the center versus outside the center. Okay, another interesting point that Chazal make, a pseudo geographical point, is that from the perspective of the creation of the world, it's not only the center of the world, it's actually the first point of the world. It is the point from which the entire world expanded. How do we know that? That's what the Evan Shtia is, the Evan Shasia, right? The Dome of the Rock, right? It's the rock that the whole world was expanded from. So Chazal see Eretz Yisrael, specifically Yerushalayim, specifically Har HaBayit, specifically Makom HaMikdash, specifically the Aron, and the Makom HaAron as the first point in the world. So that has some nice significance to it, the first point in the world, the cornerstone, but it's deeper than that. It goes a little bit deeper than that. What does it mean that something is the first point? Now, it's not just the first point on Earth. Okay, so what we're describing here, and again, we're not making a geographical statement, we're not making a scientific statement, we're making a theological or, a metaphysical, statement. What does it mean to be the first point in the world? Right? What that means, the first point in the physical world. So what that means is before this point existed, everything was non-physical, divine, whatever you want to call it. Everything was Shemayim. Right? And then this is the point from which Aretz was created. Okay, so you have two domains, Shemayim and Aretz. And what connected, what is the point where those two domains connect? Well, that would be the first point of Aretz. Would be the point where Shemayim and Ve'aretz connect, fundamentally. Okay? So, this is basically the gateway from Shemayim into Aretz. Okay? Who acknowledged that this was the gateway from Shemayim to Aretz? That was Yaakov Avinu. What did he say when he was on Har HaBayit? It was Sha'ar HaShemayim and Beit Hashem. Not just God's house, Sha'ar HaShemayim. God didn't arbitrarily you know, pick this place to live. It was actually the gateway to heaven. That's what it means. If it's the first place in the land, then it is the entranceway between heaven and the land. And that's why we say that, you know, from Har HaBayit, you know, it's Ole, you know, Yashar L'Rakia. And Tfilot go funneled through Har HaBayit before they, you know, go up to Shemayim. All these, like, strange statements. This is what it means. Okay? That's what we mean by Yerushalayim Shalmala versus Yerushalayim Shalmata. Ki'ir Shechubra L'Yachdav is, it has, you know, is Yerushalayim Shalmala and Yerushalayim Shalmata are joined, unlike everywhere else in the world. Why? Yerushalayim Shalmala is basically the last point of Shemayim. Yerushalayim Shalmata, the first point of Aretz, this is the place where Shemayim and Aretz connect. That's the idea. Ki'ir Shechubra L'Yachdav, the Chiburim, is kind of like what the Maharal was speaking about with how in the center, it's the connection point of all different points. Okay? Now, if this is the Shar HaShemayim, so, you know, this is where Tefillah's, this is, you know, where we say that Tefillah's basically go to, you know, before they go to Shemayim. I think that's what that weird statement means. But not only is it from us up to Shemayim, it's also Shemayim to us. The Kedusha of the divine domain, which can be brought into the Aretz, is brought through Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, being the Shar HaShemayim, is not just the place where tefillahs go from Aretz to Shemayim, it's the place where Kedusha can be brought from Shemayim to Aretz. So the sanctity that is brought into the world has to be funneled through Eretz Yisrael. Okay? I think that's what Chazal meant, by the way, when they called Eretz Yisrael, and specifically Yerushalayim, the Tiburo Shel Olam. The Tiburo Shel Olam. So the Tiburo Shel Olam means that it is the umbilical cord, basically, of the world. What does that mean? Well, the reason it would be like the belly button of the world is because that is the place where the fetus gets nutrients from that which is outside of it and fueling it, and then that can spread to the rest of the world. Okay, so these are the different statements that Chazal make about the significance of the land itself, when it was created, how it was created, its, you know, and its relationship to the rest of the world. But these aren't just, you know, interesting, questionable geographical statements or a geographical analysis. They're all reflections of a much deeper perspective on how we see Eretz Yisrael, both in its ability to unite individual Jews to constitute a nation by bringing them together, in you know, at least in an ideological, if not in like an actual metaphysical sense, as well as its Kedusha and its unique relationship to Shemayim and its ability to bring Kedusha into the land. So because our responsibility is to be a nation who is Kadosh, right? A Goy Kadosh. So where could you be a Goy? Only at that point where individuals are a collective. That's what a Goy means. The Radak points out, this is the word Goy. Gvi means a single entity. So you can only be one Gvi. If you want to be a Goy Kadosh, well, you can only be one Gvi in the place where divergent points are one point. And you can only be Kadosh at the place that has a unique relationship to the Kedusha of Shemayim, that first point on the Aretz, where Yerushalayim Shalmata and Yerushalayim Shalmala connect. So this is why our goal of being a Goy Kadosh is not just requires an independent land for a technical reason, a practical reason, but requires this specific place for a very essential reason.